the fishing lures, I love the plumber's snakes. I love the things that people make.
You are listening to These Things That People Make on CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph. You're listening to the theme song. It's the Burning Hell singing, I love the things that people make. And today we are going to hear an interview that I did with Jennifer Code, who is a poet based in Toronto. And she just put out a new book. It's really exciting. It's called Necessary Reservations. And she doesn't really often read aloud her poems, and she doesn't often do interviews. And I asked her to read aloud for me and do an interview, and I was so happy and lucky that she said yes. So I'm just going to get going on the interview. Thank you for doing this.
No problem.
Thing that you don't often do.
You mean never?
Never, the thing you never do. Do you want to start by reading?
Sure. I could do that. You want me just to shoot? Go ahead.
Yep, go for it.
Okay. This one is called Anti-Haiku Number 4. My mouth is aging faster than the rest of me, fastening innumerable beats of pleasure against your bends and turns. I will quicken the pace, race time like a mountain trying to outrun an avalanche. I will die alive and tongueless if this continues, pushing a poem I have memorized into you. Years later, perhaps weeks, my hand may resurrect itself from the dried-out want. I may apostrophe inaccurately just to challenge your dearth, or above you succumb to my own dripping torture.
Awesome.
Cool.
Do you feel like reading another one?
Sure. Yeah. This one, do you want me to change up styles here?
Sure.
Okay. This one is called The Skin We Lost. Apparently, I am not the first person to write a poem about Oprah. To me, this is another sign that I am running out of time. Every day becomes more mute. You come into my room. It's 3:30 and the streetlights are already turning themselves on, which is not sexy or depressing. You sit at the end of my bed trying to swallow. Your little neck pulses like a magpie eating a stone. We sift through our respective lies, each word hounding the next. And then you leave, not quite shutting the door behind you. I circle the room, stare at my typewriter, then turn the television on, quickly forgetting everything I ever felt.
It's really surprising to me that you don't actively read them aloud, because they read like things that one could read aloud.
Do they? Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, the second one I can see, it comes easier to me because it's written like prose as opposed to the first one. But I think, I mean, part of the reason I don't read them out loud is, fear. I've heard poets read and felt that it sometimes takes away from the poem because the reading isn't done well or I heard it in a different voice when I read it to myself. So my biggest fear, I think, is taking away from the poem or ruining the poem by reading and fucking it up somehow.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I think that they are really strong, because part of what makes me know that they're strong poems is because I can hear them being read.
Okay.
So maybe that means that they stand on their own without someone reading them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
I can see that.
Did you write all of these poems in a year?
In this specific book, yeah. I wrote all of them with the exception of two, I believe.
And can you, like, situate this new book, Necessary Reservations, within your body of work to date?
What do you mean by that?
Like, you have another book, you have Rough Draft out.
Yes.
Also, yeah. Do you have...
That's it, just the two, yeah.
Okay. And, like, how do the two books compare?
The Rough Draft, I was taking the Humber Creative Writing Program
uh-huh.
in Toronto, and which failed me deeply, but that's another story. But because of that, I spent a lot of time editing that one. You know, there was a lot of, with my mentor, there was a lot of edits done and corrections and going back and forth. And I had more than two other people that, you know, are friends of mine, look over those before I was ready to print it. And this one, while a couple people did look at them, I'd say I only got one, you know, one person that really, Julia Gingrich, my good friend, that really went through them with me and gave them a good old scrubbing. So this one, compared to the other one, was, it wasn't necessarily more raw, but it didn't spend as much time through the grinder, I guess.
And how do you feel about that? Do you feel like the grinder is useful for you?
It's interesting because I definitely... Editing for me has been, it's recent as in, you know, the past 5 years, I'd say. I was always really opposed to editing. I think it was just laziness, but I was always like, no, you know, whatever comes out of me, that's raw and that's it and that's what it's meant to be and I'm not going to touch it. But I've really, you know, changed my ways when it comes to that. But I think for Rough Draft, it was important that I went through all that editing. But having self-published that first little book and feeling good about it and having had positive feedback from it, I think I felt okay about the lack of feedback I had on this one before I put it to the press.
And in terms of, like, the way that you approached the poems or your relationship to the poems, do you feel like you have a different relationship to the poems in Necessary Reservations as opposed to the ones in Rough Draft?
Definitely. The ones in Rough Draft, well, I am stretching my mind a little bit here because I don't have it in front of me.
Yeah.
I believe that one, you know, a lot of them were based on stuff that was in the past.
Mm.
So, you know, like years and years ago, while they were written, you know, within good time, I was, you know, writing through stuff that had happened a while ago. And Necessary Reservations is stuff that's, you know, no more than a year old.
Okay. Yeah, so it's more concise. It's a more concise body of work.
Yeah, for sure.
Which is interesting because I think often when we do, when people make lots of different mediums of things, like when I started painting, like, there's this desire to put every idea you ever had into mm-hmm. your first creative works, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And then as you keep going, you're like, oh, okay. Like, this thing that I do can be simplified because it's not the only one and only thing I'm ever going to do.
Agreed. For sure.
So thank you for doing...
Thank you.
are listening to CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph, and this is a show called These Things That People Make. It's a show about things people make that are not considered fine art and the reasons and or politics behind the things that they do. And I'm airing an interview with the lovely Jennifer Code today, who is talking about her work her new book, Necessary Reservations, and also we were talking in the last part of the interview about the process of writing Rough Draft, and Jennifer Code alluded to being involved in the Humber Creative Writing Program, and we're going to go to the next part of the interview where I start by asking her about that. Do you want to talk about how the Humber Creative Writing Program failed you?
Yeah, I can do that. That's okay. I think it's a great program. It's a great idea. My biggest issue with it is this. The mentor that you get assigned does not choose you. And I'm sure there are multiple reasons for that. But I think it's, you know, given that it's a distant ed course, so you don't ever meet your mentor. I mean, you can probably at some point, but, you know, it's supposed to be, you know, you communicate through mail or email or whatever. And the fact that you don't, if someone's going to mentor me, I would need them to be passionate is maybe too hard a word, but passionate about what it is that I'm writing, or at least interested or see something in what it is that I'm writing. And without, when you just get assigned a bunch of people, I mean, I don't know how many people my mentor was working with, but I just felt a disconnect with them. And I, you know, they're a great writer and well accomplished and probably could have been a good mentor to other people. And it could also just be that I needed and wanted more. I was admitted to this program through Oxford like 5 years ago. And it was, I would say it was a balance between giving the students or the participants freedom to write while also providing them with a bit of structure. And I think that I was, you know, kind of looking for that structure to push me further. And the idea of having a mentor to me is thrilling. But I think having a mentor that doesn't choose you is problematic.
Can you just talk to me a bit about your personal writing process? How do you write a poem?
I would say that my process is sort of three stages. It's accidental, revelation, and then craft. So, and this is something I discovered actually while doing the writing program. So there you go. There's something good about the Humber writing program. Mind you, I got that out of sitting at a bar with my friend, you know, while I was, like, reeling after reading the comments on one of my poems. Mm. I was like, what is my process? Why? And we worked it out together. So
it was in resistance of the Humber writing program.
It was in resistance of the program.
Yeah,
first of all, it's accidental. I stumble into my poems. I don't set out to write something. It's not premeditated. It's more, I'm about to explode with whatever it is I'm feeling, and it's got to go somewhere. So it's going to go on the page, and that's why it's sort of sloppy, and I often don't. There are times when I'll go back and look at something, and I have no idea what it is that was trying to say or what I was writing. And then that moves me into revelation. So once I spend enough time with the poem and working with it, I tend to, especially when I talk to other people about it, and then I tend to have a bit of a revelation, realize what it actually was that I was saying. Sometimes, you know, in response to other people's responses to the poem. So if I'm sitting and talking about something that I wrote with someone, and they're like, well, this is what I got out of it, or this is what I heard you saying in the poem, it'll often, you know, either I'll say that's totally off and this is what I actually meant, or I'll agree with that. And then once I realize, you know, once I have the revelation of where I was, you know, where I was going with that, you know, the accident, I move into craft and I start to work on making it readable, I guess, and accessible. You're probably going to ask me, you know, why I'm so abstract when I write, or, you know, why there's, like, seems to be hidden secrets or whatever. But I think actually, I think I've worked a lot on that. Like, there used to be really no discernible narrative in what it was that I was, what I was doing. But I, over the past couple of years, through the Humber Writing Program,
through your own brain, give yourself some credit.
I've become more committed to, like, you know, working on making the vague more explicit, which I guess, you know, doesn't always translate, but.
Well, I think in a lot of the poems in this, in Necessary Reservations, it's very specific. There's just very specific descriptions of very specific moments.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that it's interesting because in a lot of ways it feels like you are describing your, like, private experience of a social interaction.
Yes.
And so it's kind of like we're, the readers are like inside your ribcage as you experience something. And so then we get a glimpse of how that might feel like. So we don't get a whole picture, but we get this very specific, like, sense of a scene, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
The very specific feeling of a room, the very specific. And I think that's part of what makes them, like, I think there's this other piece. Like, I think there's things you describe, but then there's also the way that you use words that makes me think a lot about something that Jeanette Winterson wrote in Art Objects,
mm-hmm.
where she just talks, where she talks about just like, she's like, who cares what the story is about? I'm talking about the words,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's more that she was saying, like, it's more the words that make up a piece of prose as opposed to what the storyline is.
Hell yeah, hands down.
And so sure. I think that you do that too, right? You take these words and you put them in your pieces, and then I'm reading this thing and then I'm like, what? Like, this totally fits. Like, but like it just, it's kind of like they're very specific choices. And I think that's also what makes them work, is that, like, you've chosen, like, your pieces are very sparse and specific, and then also, like, very much about the language.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's good to hear you say.
Good.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think, as I said before, like, it, you know, I used to just write, I mean, not that my stuff isn't abstract. I, for me, the biggest thing, this hasn't changed, and maybe it will at some point, but for me, the biggest thing is that that I write something, and when people read it, they feel something. I don't need anyone to understand what I'm talking about or to get a story out of it. As long as it makes you feel something, that's what's important to me, because that has been my experience in reading other poets and other writers, is I may not always understand, like, for instance, one of my favorite writers, Anne Carson.
Yeah.
You know, I may not always get all her references to things, but, you know, to the classics and Greek mythology and things like that, but I feel her, or not necessarily her, but I feel it. I feel the words when I'm reading it. And that, you know, that to me is the most important thing.
Are listening to These Things That People Make on CFRU 93.3 FM. I've just played the very beginning of a Luya song from their album Fake or Death, and that song is Tantamount. I encourage you to hear the whole song when you get a chance. I just only have half an hour, so I'm trying to cram everything in. I'm airing an interview with Jennifer Code, who is a poet based out of Toronto. She just put out her most recent new book very recently, called Necessary Reservations. She self-published it. And I'm going to go to the last part of the interview where she also reads my two favorite poems from the book. Are your poems true stories? If they are true, how do you figure out sharing them, since they're also private?
Sorry, what was that second half? After you asked me the question and then I refused to respond immediately.
Are your poems true? And if they are, how do you navigate sharing them with people when they are so private?
I would say 90% true.
Okay.
You know, what that other percentage is, I don't know, I'm not good with numbers and things like that, but it, yes, true, yes. There is truth there. How do I navigate in terms of exposing myself or exposing other people?
Both.
I think that goes back to, you know, the part where I feel as though I don't feel like I'm exposing anyone when I'm writing, you know, maybe to a small group of people who might have a sense of things that are going on, but that's guesswork. And anyone else who reads themselves in a poem, I mean, I don't know. I think that most people that would, you know, anyone who would read themselves in a poem in general are supporters of what it is that I do and would be okay with that. And I think that there's enough room there for interpretation. I mean, it's kind of the nature of what I do. Like, I don't write very explicitly when it comes to, like, you know, I don't name names. I don't do anything like that. I don't out anyone, I don't think, anyway. I don't know. This is what I do, you know? This is, like, the one thing that I found in life in general that I feel that I'm okay at. And with poetry, I feel like, while, yes, I'm exposing myself, I feel like there are things, you know, I'm exposing myself through the words, but at the same time, I can hide behind the words.
Mm.
You know, there's armor there, for sure. And in terms of other people, I don't know. I haven't really faced any opposition. I haven't faced any situation in which someone was, like, felt, you know, slighted in any way. And, you know, with Rough Draft, my first one, you know, the people that I wrote out they're a long time ago, and they probably will never get their hands on that thing, so.
Do you want to read the other two poems you prepared to read? Those ones?
Yeah, I can attempt.
Okay.
I will read, unless, you know, do you have a request?
I have a favorite poem.
What's your favorite?
I like the jealousy poem.
All right, well, here it goes then.
Yes.
You named it Jealousy. I read a poem and thought of you but didn't send it. Words, wide night. And not because it wasn't good or because it said too plainly things I like to obscure, but because it hadn't come from my pen, and so I could not imagine you reading it without thinking of someone else's stained fingers inside of you.
So good. I love that poem. The other poem that I love the most, let me find it. I have your book here, is After the Denouement.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. You want me to throw that one down?
Yes, please.
All right. Listen, I wrote a terrible poem, sent it to you, ruining everything inside of me. Still, it's not words that pose the problem. Early fall, late fall. Either way, change inevitable will sneak up like a season we thought was giving us shade. And suddenly we'll long for another calculated heat, the vertical cloud, that taste in my mouth that compelled me to write everything down in the first place. In the first place, your forearm morphing into your thigh, invisible rivulet, one liable muscle to the next, could not stop me from digging you out. Every splintered piece you might mock as delicate, I tornado my tongue through, leaving nothing but the barking access behind.
Woo! You mentioned Aunt Carson as somebody you really loved. Are there other poets or writers whose work inspires you?
I don't want to say I'm predictable, but I probably am. You know, I'm a bit of a two-sider. Like, I love Anne Sexton and Adrienne Rich. And I am, in fact, a fan of Margaret Atwood's poems. It's funny, I've found that people don't really realize that she writes poetry, which I find odd because she's got a gazillion books out there. But I like her stuff. But yeah, Anne Carson is on the top of my list, and then you know, a series of whatever I'm given. I also have a bit of a soft spot for what people tend to shit on me for, which is things like Henry Miller and Bukowski and boys like that.
Because they write so graphically about women?
Really misogynistic and, you know, horrifying in all their ways. But there's something, I was having this conversation in the car the other night with someone about lesbians trapped in men's bodies. And that's sort of how I see those boys, a lot of those male writers. Maybe that's wrong. I also like Leonard Cohen.
I think, like, I read, which one? What's the one that, Cancer, what is it called?
Oh, Tropic of Cancer. Mm-hmm.
I read Henry Miller's Tropic of Cancer. I read about half of it. I would have kept reading it. I put it down because I think I was reading something else. I really loved it. And I think there's something like, it's just interesting, right? Like, as a queer woman, I think that, like, I give myself special permission to enjoy that kind of writing. Like, you know what I mean? And I don't know, like, I'd like to talk to a whole, like, I'd like to have a big discussion with a bunch of people about this, because I have only talked to a few people, and mostly I talk in my head, where I'm like, this is great. I love this. This validates my sexuality in this way. Or,
it's okay that you're reading this.
Yeah.
I support you in this decision.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, right, is I don't, you know, it can get complicated.
Yeah.
You know, when you're reading writers, so that a lot of the world see as, like, you know, inappropriate, and I mean, I think what I love about those writers is this, the pursuit of being, or the, you know, I am a poet. That's what I am.
Yeah.
You know, and they get drunk. Not that you need to get drunk to be a poet, but they get drunk, and they love women.
Yeah.
And they write, and those are things that I can relate to.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Like, I get that. I like my wine. You know, I like whiskey.
Yeah.
I love to write. Women are beautiful. Like, how can you not? I mean, I can relate to that. So.
Yeah, and there's also this, like, really, like, solid crassness to the way that Henry Miller and Bukowski